Welcome to the American Magazine Podcast. I'm very pleased to be joined today by Father John Fuller, who is an associate professor of medicine at Boston University School of Medicine and is also assigned to Boston College High School. Welcome, Father Fuller.
Thank you, Tim.
Now, you have an article in this current issue of America called The Continuing Crisis, a report on the church's global response to HIV/AIDS. Now, there's a couple of significant anniversaries here in terms of we're looking at World AIDS Day is coming up, correct?
Correct, on December 1st.
December 1st. And as you state in your article, it's been 32 years since the first cases of AIDS were reported, and then 30 years since the first papers published in the journal Science identified, as you say, the agent, the causative agent of the epidemic, HIV. Maybe you can begin by just giving us a sense of what things were like back then in terms of what people knew about the disease and how the church responded.
I graduated from med school in 1983, so the epidemic was identified in 1981, but I didn't hear a word about it until my last quarter in med school when I was taking a clinical pathology course and we walked into a patient's room. But before we did, the professor said, "Now, I'm about to show you a tumor that's so rare it may be the only case of this that you'll see in your career." And it was a man with Kaposi sarcoma. And then the next quarter, I landed at San Francisco General Hospital, part of UC San Francisco, which became one of the epicenter hospitals in the country. That was 2 years into the epidemic. We still hadn't identified the virus yet. We didn't know how it was transmitted. There were no treatments. These patients were very, very sick. So it was both a scary time, but also an exciting time to be there as something was beginning to be understood and as treatments eventually evolved. And from a religious perspective, it was very, I guess, attractive to me in the sense that this was obviously a very neuralgic area for pastoral workers that had no experience sometimes with these populations, were also afraid of the chance of transmission, and sometimes would leave patients after pastoral encounters really sort of unhappy, bereft, sad, and guilty that they really hadn't had their spiritual needs attended to. They felt like they had just been preached to about what was a church policy about drug use or homosexuality. So it became an opportunity to work with other Catholics about training pastoral ministers, the facts of the epidemic and what the needs of these patients were.
I think that was a very interesting part of your article, because I think people today, you know, the church does, I think, a very good job in their international and also nationally treating patients with this disease. They're in many ways seen as at the forefront. But back then, it was so new that, and as you said, these were populations that perhaps the church had not been ministering to as much. So it posed a real challenge.
Right. It was not just a lack of experience. It was also a real tension of how the church should appropriately respond from its armamentarium of mercy while it was still, maintaining its teachings.
So we go from there, in those early days, to the more international response, which has kind of grown over time. How did that start and how has that developed?
Well, it started just as a natural outgrowth of the presence on the ground of Catholic institutions running hospitals and dispensaries, often by religious women. So they were already on the scene. And the experience I had in Uganda was of the Irish Medical Missionaries of Mary, who were there during the awful days of the Idi Amin terror. The nuns sometimes had to be locked into storage containers at nighttime for their security, but they stayed there. And as AIDS came very heavily early on into Uganda, they obtained support from European donors and couldn't provide HIV medicines at that time. It was just not in the public healthcare market. It was only in the rich private sector. But they were able to do what we've done all along, and that's to provide spiritual and pastoral care and accompaniment, nutritional support, education about hygiene, and so on. And so they had very well-organized teams that would spend 14-day cycles, two different teams, 14 cycles, going out into the rural areas and providing this basic care. As the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, Malaria, and the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, also called PEPFAR, began to provide billions of dollars in the early 1980s, these drugs were in the countries on the ground. And so the church realized that it really needed to become expert in providing this as well if it was going to provide a full range of services to these populations, especially since the funds became available. So in many developing countries, the church has been a very important distributor of these drugs with the support of the Global Fund and PEPFAR. One example I give in the article is that in the country of South Africa, at a time when the president and the minister of health were denying the relationship between HIV and AIDS, the Southern African Conference of Catholic Bishops set up 28 treatment centers to really become a major first source of these drugs and for patients in public and Catholic hospitals.
Now, you mentioned another one of the neuralgic topics, which is the use of condoms. And as you state in the piece, there is some nuance here. There's this message of hope from the Southern African Bishops' Conference. Maybe you can just summarize what their argument was.
Sure. They wrote this pastoral letter to the people of the three Southern African countries that the conference represents, saying that they initially in the article criticized the use of condoms, saying that sometimes they felt it could lead to increased risk-taking. But then they took up the question of a so-called discordant couple in which one member of a married household was HIV infected and the other wasn't. And they basically said that, you know, we recognize the right and the obligation of an individual to guard their life. And what they said was, the church accepts that everyone has the right to defend one's life against mortal danger. This would include using the appropriate means and course of action. And I think what we're seeing with them and with many other bishops and cardinals around the world is I think we begin to see that we don't have to think about a nuanced position on condoms to prevent HIV infection as a frontal attack on the church's teaching on condoms for contraception. And I think even Pope Benedict has said that, where he felt that in this case or that, it could be a movement toward a different way, a more human way of living sexuality.
Now, you write, too, about the development of the Catholic HIV-AIDS Network. If you could talk about what that is and what role it plays within the international community in addressing and dealing with patients with HIV-AIDS.
So Caritas Internationalis is a confederation of 164 national Catholic relief and development agencies, of which the two U.S. members are Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Charities USA. And in 1987, they, as a global network, realized that this was a growing crisis that they needed to focus on and give resources to. So they initially created an AIDS working group that eventually moved to a task force, and it was given the job of meeting and spreading best practices, helping countries to understand what the best scientific approach was to treating the epidemic. And also they did a lot of training with clergy, religious orders, and bishops' conferences on the particular challenges of the pastoral response to this epidemic. Over time, that focus on HIV within Caritas eventually became mainstream rather than having particular instruments within the group that was focused on this. And so that work was eventually taken up by a group that was initially called the AIDS Funding Network Group. This was a consortium of Catholic development agencies from Western Europe and North America and Australia that had tried to develop consistent and ethical guidelines for funding AIDS programs. When Caritas moved back, this group renamed itself and became the Catholic HIV-AIDS Network, and took on the same job of developing best practices, keeping the group abreast of scientific developments. But it also became a real partner with the World Health Organization and the United Nations AIDS Organization to experience from stories from the field what the experience was and how policies could be better developed. One of the real accomplishments of that group, which is called CHAN, is that they worked with the International Association of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers to develop weight-based dosing for children. Previously, all of the medications were based for adult sizes, and any other option was usually a liquid that may contain alcohol. So they developed new techniques of creating scored tablets or sprinkles that could be weight-based for the children.
You conclude your article by saying that one of the legacies of the church's approach is this comprehensive nature, and how that has actually been contributed significantly to a new model for responding to global health needs. Maybe you can talk about that, how that comprehensive model has been a good thing.
Yeah, you know, there's actually a controversy within the public health world right now between those who feel that we haven't even given enough resources to AIDS and went far from the targets of bringing drugs to all the people who need them, and those who feel that actually AIDS has gotten a disproportionate burden of resources and that we should not give so many resources to AIDS. We should try to support other health programs. And I think what AIDS has taught us is that in the pre-AIDS era, there were often very vertical programs. You know, there would be a TB treatment program, and that's all it would deal with. Or there would be a malaria treatment program or a vaccination program, and they would come in with their personnel and their trucks and do their program. But there was no sense of linking these programs horizontally or looking at the comprehensive package of health services that a community needed. And I think what we're seeing as this perhaps argument between the public health and those who don't want so many resources for AIDS and those who think that we're just getting started with AIDS is that we realize it does have to be more comprehensive. It's got to be horizontally linked, and that the real answer here is not to bring AIDS down to the level of inadequate treatment that's so often the case in poor countries, but rather to use the model of the scaling up that we've achieved with AIDS to some extent as a model for how we can try to bring the global health services package to more to poor and developing countries.
And maybe we can just conclude with, you know, we started talking about the situation in the United States. It seems like, I mean, with the advent of all of these drugs, and that the situation is much improved for people who contract HIV. And as I understand it, it's, you know, if you get the right medications when you're pregnant, you don't necessarily transmit it to a child. So is the real challenge now the international front? I mean, is that where our most of the focus is?
It is, certainly, in the sense that right now we think that there's about 35 million people living with AIDS in the world. The target to bring treatment to those people was at 15 million by the year 2015. We're currently at 10 million. The key is to stop this number of infected people from increasing, because this treatment, at least given our present scientific understanding and technology, has to be treatment for life. We have just learned in a very important study published last year that the most effective way that we can prevent transmissions is to treat the infected partner. That decreases transmission by 96%. Which is greater than we've ever achieved by any kind of behavioral modification or even with condoms. So the World Health Organization, as a result of that, has increased its target for bringing treatment to infected people from 15 million to 26 million. The thought is that we're really in a very unique window period in which we could really try to eradicate new infections if we get this treatment out there, not only as treatment, but as prevention. The hope is that we could do that before this mushroom's out of scale and we just can't reach all these individuals. But of course, the issue is of the international economic situation has decreased the funding that's available both through the Global Fund and through PEPFAR. So we've got great aspirations, but we're also dealing with the reality of the global recession.
Now, my understanding, the United States has been a big promoter, and like under George W. Bush, for example, I understand, gave a large amount to PEPFAR. Is that still the case, or are those numbers going down?
The numbers are going down, and PEPFAR is using a term called indigenization, where it had initially, in the countries of sub-Saharan Africa and the Caribbean, where it had focused its resources, it had been essentially the sole provider in programs that it was supporting. Now, I think reasonably the government is saying this is an expanding project, it's lifelong. We really need to move to a model of sustainability rather than simply of trying to capitalize this completely ourselves. And so they're really asking local governments to take on a lot of the responsibility for funding, and that's actually at about 50% right now worldwide in terms of national governments supporting their AIDS projects. As a result of that move to have governments take care of these programs, there is a concomitant move for PEPFAR to decrease funding to church-related programs. For example, in the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, programs have been reduced by 22, and 3 church-sponsored voluntary counseling and testing programs in Namibia have closed in the last 2 years. So, yes, this move towards sustainability also means a move toward dependence on local funds, which simply aren't adequate to the challenge right now.
Okay, well, we've been talking with Father John Fuller, a Jesuit priest and a doctor, and his article, again, is called The Continuing Crisis in the December 2nd issue of America. And we want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks very much, Jim.